Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and Tim Bradner of the Alaska Journal of Commerce. Tim, you are back from the legislature where you covered oil and gas for your publication. There were multiple important bills, important issues, seemed like every week, especially at the end. Walk us through them, the tax revision, the gas line to South Central, and trucking gas to Fairbanks.
Michael, let me take trucking gas to Fairbanks first. The idea is Fairbanks is heats with fuel oil, very, very expensive. The plan is for the state to facilitate and finance a small LNG plant on the North Slope, truck the LNG to Fairbanks, and as a near-term measure, this will help Fairbanks a lot, they hope. The issues are ADA is the state agency, will take the lead on that. Can they really get the project together? Can they develop it and make it really
work? A couple
of
things. First, there's my understanding there's no guarantee this is actually going to happen. Is that correct?
I think it's a pretty good chance
it will.
It's proven to be workable. The Fairbanks, there's a small gas utility there now that heats its core part of Fairbanks. They truck LNG from Anchorage now. It's a small quantity compared with what we're talking about. This is not a big project. This is more of a interim until there might someday be a gas pipeline.
And is there anything you could consider a timeline?
Oh, they claim that they can have it up and running in 2015, but that's, you know how these things go. But the sooner the better from Fairbanks. I mean, if this thing, the governor has a tremendous amount of credibility at stake on this because this is his project. If they really do cut the cost of energy, at least for home heating in Fairbanks, in half, which is what they are promising, it'll be a really big deal for Fairbanks.
Okay, and the other issues?
Oh, the in-state gas pipeline was another hot one. This is the state's working to develop a 24-inch, now it's a 36-inch pipeline that would come from the North Slope to South Central Alaska. This is like a fallback plan for us in case the big pipeline the oil companies are working on, if that doesn't go, this is something we can do ourselves. A lot of controversy about it in the session, a lot of skeptics. Can the state really do this? Is this really a good idea to be spending?
And Valdez spent something like $1 million fighting it, right, Tim?
Well, they say they spent $800,000, and they, of course, you know, if you're cynical, you say, well, they don't like it because it doesn't go to Valdez, but they claim that the project is not designed properly. It should be a much bigger project, which is probably true. But in any event, the bill passed. We are going to spend the money. It is a contingency. I see it as a contingency, something in our back pocket in case the big one doesn't go.
And finally, the tax revision.
Well, that was the hot topic of the session, and it finally did pass. It's a pretty significant tax reduction for the industry. There's a lot of critics and naysayers running around claiming, and there's a lot of numbers being tossed around, Michael, about how much it's going to cost. You hear numbers of up to $8 billion, that sort of thing. The Department of Revenue, which is what we really have to look at, is the fiscal cost of this tax is much more modest. Started in FY 2015, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, not billions of dollars. But the trick is that assumes that there's no new oil production, and if we start to see a response, we could see that go positive pretty quick.
Okay.
And there are some indications that the industry is responding.
Let's go to Paul Jenkins. Paul, your perspective on what you've heard from our colleague Tim.
Going to what you were just talking about, ConocoPhillips is moving a new rig, I guess, north, and it's going to be reworking wells that are already in place in the hopes of increasing production. It's going to take some time. This is not going to be one of those things where they turn on a spigot and all of a sudden there's more oil. They're going to have to weigh projects against the cost and savings and what they can get on the break on the taxes and go forward from there. And I would imagine there's going to be hues and cries for the next few years because all of a sudden the pipeline overnight's not full of oil.
But I've heard many hues.
I've heard a cry or two. So I think that you'll see it's going to take up time to ramp up and decide what it is they're going to do and decide whether to do it.
Tim.
Michael, there's I mean, you have to recognize that these legislators who spearheaded this thing are really on the hook. And there's going to be an election in 2 years. And if there's no response from industry, or not enough of a response, people are really going to feel the
heat. My understanding is the effective date is not till the beginning of next year.
That's right.
So whether we're going to lose money or not, we're not going to know anything except for 6 months of the campaign. Right?
Well, that's true. And the other thing, it's going to take some time. But I think if people see activity picking up, like Paul mentioned, another rig coming up, the companies have already also talked about two or three larger projects they're working on. They can't say right now that they're going to do them, but it's looking pretty good. But we won't know, so it's a
risk.
Steve
McDonald, Paul, did you have something very briefly?
I want to interject. The companies also have to know that they have to do something, I think, or what the legislature giveth, it will taketh away, and it'll do it pretty quickly, too.
That's right.
Or the people will.
Steve McDonald, the magic word, campaign, was hanging in the air there briefly.
Yes.
And Bill Walker has declared as run for the Republican nomination for governor. He's run before.
Yeah.
You've talked to him, and you know him well. So tell us, what did Bill have to say when he announced he's seeking the Republican nomination?
Well, he ran 3 years ago now. We're a little more than a year off from the next gubernatorial elections. But he had a strong run in the primary. He got about 35-36% of the vote, if I remember correctly. And that's not too bad, considering he had really very little, if any, name recognition. He also had tied to him the title of sort of like a one-issue candidate. He, of course, has really touted a natural gas pipeline in state in Alaska, and he campaigned on that quite a bit. So a lot of folks just tagged him with that moniker of just being a one-issue candidate. So this time around, though, he feels a lot better with things. He's gotten a lot of response. He says a lot more support. He said one of the things he had to overcome 4 years ago was the fact that so many people thought he was still living in Valdez. He was the former mayor of Valdez. He had told me that a lot of folks said, well, how long have you been living in Anchorage? When did you move out of Valdez? He said, well, it's been like 20-some-odd years that he's been in the Anchorage area. So he had a lot of things to overcome 4 years ago, and he feels he's going to be a much more formidable candidate this time around.
Steve, did you get any sense of how he raises money to challenge a sitting governor? Where does he get the money to finance this?
Well, that's a good question, because I don't think he's against, like, for instance, SB 21, the tax break bill that was touted by the governor. I don't think he's opposed to that. I don't know if the oil industry, if Governor Parnell decides to run for re-election. And who knows? He says we had one of his spokespeople told us that expect an announcement within the next couple of weeks of what he's going to do. But there's also a U.S. Senate seat that's going to be up in 2014. There's a U.S. House seat that's also up for grabs. I don't know if he'll go.
Let's try one more thing here, Steve. Yeah. It's important in a campaign to differentiate yourself from your opponent. Mm-hmm. In talking to Walker and what you know about him, have you seen enough that how's he going to differentiate himself if he's not going to use the gas line per se?
He talks a lot about leadership. He doesn't feel that Governor Parnell is a strong leader. He doesn't get out in front of an issue and actually go and stump for it and push that issue. Walker says, if I propose a project or propose an initiative, I'll be out in front of it. I'll be the one who takes it to the people. I'll be the one who extols its virtues and answers the questions. He doesn't feel that Parnell does that. Governor Parnell does that. He feels that there was a lack of leadership on even the tax plan. He felt that there was the legislature that carried the day on revamping tax regulations. So he feels the key there, one of the keys, and one of the ways he'll differentiate himself between himself and if Governor Parnell decides to run for re-election, he'll be much more of a leader, and he'll tout that leadership ability.
Okay, Tim, let's return to you. Anchorage activists determined to derail the Parnell tax plan or the tax revisions, or they call it the giveaway to the oil companies, are one of an initiative or going to start circulating petitions to get an initiative to repeal the tax proposal, the tax law as it is now. Tell us more about that and give us some sense of the lay of the land for their prospects.
Well, they have, Michael, they have, I think, 90 days that they've got to gather 30,000 signatures. And that's a pretty formidable undertaking to get it on the August ballot.
If I might, that would almost demand paid gatherers.
Yeah, so have to raise money. Not to say that they can't do that. As formidable as the logistics of that are, it has been done before, and it can be done. And I see this as, and also the people behind this, Ray Metcalf, back in the old days when he was in the legislature, he was known as Disco Ray.
Yeah.
He liked to dance. Also, that disco dates us all. But but this is a serious guy. I mean, he's got a track record for this kind of stuff, and I see this as potentially a very hazardous thing for the governor and for
the industry. Well, there are also some backbone people who are getting involved
right.
in it.
Yeah.
I believe Bella Hammond was one of the signers.
She is.
Wanted to get this whole thing going.
And Vic Fisher is involved in it as well.
Yeah. If they get the signatures and can get on the ballot, when would they be on the ballot?
I think potentially the next primary election, which would be in 2014.
And can you imagine?
Which
I'm sorry, Tim, go ahead.
I was just going to say the public attitudes, I mean, boy, on this one. Remember what the cruise ship initiative, the tax that passed? Just largely a populist, you know, we don't like cruise ships. Don't bother me with the details, you know, tax them.
Don't bug me.
Yeah, same thing might happen here. But, you know, Michael, a lot of things may depend on what the attitudes about the economy are. If the industry is really picking up, there's more money being spent, movement of the gas pipeline maybe by then.
I guess what you're saying, important thing to remember is the election's not being held today.
Right.
There'd be somewhat of a different environment when it occurs.
Right.
Steve?
But it's a wild card, though.
Speaking of this wild card has the potential to be the most expensive initiative campaign in history.
Yes. You'll have the industry on one side. You'll have a lot of the quote-unquote giveaway folks who are going to be on the other side. But there's also another potential in here, too. This thing could really overshadow a gubernatorial race in 2014. If, again, I think he'll run for re-election, but let's just say Governor Parnell runs for re-election. He makes it official. And if he has to defend this thing in the primary as well, and you've got a lot of people who are going to be motivated in that primary to come out and cast their ballot for or against that thing, getting rid of the new tax regulations, he's going to have to fight this campaign on two fronts. He's going to have to defend that issue, and he's going to have to defend his administration and campaign for
and
the election.
And in that context you're describing, it could be a turnout election, couldn't it?
It could be. You have a motivator there, and this is where you go back a few years ago in August when Lisa Murkowski was running for her Senate seat, and she had an August primary against some guy named Joe Miller, I think his name was, right? Who was the motivated support base to get out there, and who was energized? It was Joe Miller and his Tea Party compatriots who really turned out at the polls and wound up winning that thing. And that, of course, set the stage for Lisa Murkowski's historic write-in campaign. But if you have an issue on that ballot, and August primaries are notorious for having low turnouts, but if you've got the issue that has invigorated and energized your base, they're going to be the ones who turn out.
Speaking of wild cards, Steve, there's one more wild card in here. My understanding is in that August primary, if the marijuana initiative is big enough signatures to put legalization of marijuana on the ballot, that ballot will be on the same, will be there for the voters when they go there in August next to the oil tax revision.
Yeah.
And from a practical point of view, what was pointed out to me is you might get a lot more voters in the age group of 20 to 40 than you would get in a regular primary election, and what the effect that might have.
Oh, yeah. If that does happen, Michael, then you're going to have a huge turnout in August. Those are two, as they say, hot button issues.
I'm in favor of pot, and I'm against lower oil taxes. Go ahead, Steve.
Michael, it could also go the other way too. I mean, if the marijuana initiative went down big time, you could also take both initiatives down, because that often happens. You know,
well, that marijuana got 43.something% last time. I suspect it might get pretty much similar this time.
You know, another factor is that if people people have a tendency, if they don't understand something, they vote no to it.
That's true.
And the oil tax thing is so complicated.
But when you look at it, do you want dope legalized or not? That's pretty simplistic.
Yeah, that's simple.
You've seen things in Colorado and Washington State now. They've passed voter initiatives to legalize marijuana use there. So is there a trend?
I think what we're running up against here is the difficulty of predicting the future.
And the big hurdle has yet to be crossed. They've got to get the signatures. And that's it.
From a number of legislative districts, they have to get so many. It's
correct.
There's a hurdle there.
But
if they have some money, they can do it, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Steve, one more thing. Let's stick with you. The sequester. Washington's battle of the budget and the deficit has now had some effects all over the country, and particularly with aviation. And that could be really important to Alaska, although it seems like Congress may be solving this right now.
Because they're getting ready to take another vacation, and they have to fly home to their district. So they passed this morning, this is Friday afternoon, they passed funds.
The Congressman's Safe Flight Act, is that
what
you're
talking about? Yeah, really. Yeah, somebody made a remark about Head Start for kindergarten kids. You know, would they act that fast to approve money to help save the Head Start program or whatever? You know. But yeah, they're getting ready to make their reservations and get on airplanes, and they don't want to be delayed. So they went and appropriated money to give the FAA so they can get the furloughed FAA traffic controllers back in the control tower. So all you got to do is give them a holiday and get them on the airplanes, and they don't want to sit there in line.
And we have heard that there might be some effects on the military bases up here, but any evidence of that so far?
In Fairbanks, F-16s have been grounded up there. It's obviously very expensive to fly those airplanes with that kind of jet fuel. So yeah, we've seen the effects up in the interior. Those F-15s have been grounded up there. I don't know if there have been any cutbacks here at J-Bear or anything, but certainly at Eielson Air Force Base in the interior, they felt the effects.
Let's go back to Paul Jenkins. Paul, speaking of initiatives and petitions, city labor leaders and their allies are crafting a petition to repeal the Sullivan labor laws through a public vote. Tell us more.
This thing passed, the ordinance itself, Ordinance 37, passed on March 26th. It was almost an immediate effort to get it repealed. They wanted to get the voters to turn this thing over. What turns out, the city attorney said no. This thing is basically an administrative act. You're trying to overturn an administrative rewrite of an ordinance. No, you can't do that. And they tossed it out. Well, these guys went back. Then the unions, the eight unions or so that were stripped of the right to strike and denied pay raises and whatnot, went back and they think last Friday, I believe, again filed to try to get this on the ballot. And we don't know what's happened yet. They have 10 days from the time that they filed it.
You guess that either way, whatever the decision is by the municipal attorney, there'll be a court case?
Everything is settled in court, sure. I don't know why we just don't say, don't do all this. Let's just find a judge. I have to believe that. So the labor union say, no, the way this is written, it's not an administrative rewrite that you could, in fact, put in a few administrative things in every ordinance and therefore make them repeal proof that I'm sure a judge, the judges up here like to tend to go that kind of open concept of what these things are. I suppose they would win in court, but I think that's probably where it's going.
And we have no idea of the timeline here.
They filed it Friday. The city has 10 days. The clerk's office has 10 days to decide what to do. After that, we'll have to see what they do.
Okay. Tim Bradner, the legislature passed or advanced a very Republican agenda this session, and the Republican leadership and the rank and file as well said, well, that's because look at the election results. We reflect our voters, and we reflect the will of the Alaska people. What did the Democrats get out of this session, and where do they go now?
Well, the Democrats didn't get much. They were in such a weak position in both the House and the Senate. They were quite vocal, quite and articulate in a lot of ways in raising objections, particularly the senators who are newly out of power, no longer part of the coalition. But I think what's worth pointing out is that You know, this thing is more fragile than you think because it really depends. I mean, two senators, a change in two Senate positions would put them back in the position where they're in coalition territory. You know, if you have a Republican majority of one, if it's a 10-10 Senate, you're certainly a coalition. But even a majority of one, you really need the Democrats to make a deal with you. And that puts them back to where they were in the last legislature. So I think, going back to this oil tax, I think the Fairbanks senators are very much on the spot on this because Fairbanks is a volatile place, sensitive to labor issues, no friend of the industry particularly.
And that's a long history too in Fairbanks.
Yeah, yeah. That this could, if we lost one or if there were one or two senators lost in Fairbanks, for example, or even one. One in particular who took a very strong stand on this, Click Bishop, I think that would change the coloration of the legislative leadership.
Steve, any thoughts on this?
No, it's so much depends on what happens over the next, you would think a couple of years because it's not going to be like
I suppose
like
it's
Paul
how hard the Republican majority and the governor want to push at the same time.
Yeah, but it's like Paul said, you just don't turn on a spigot and more oil goes through here and then there you have your instant results. It's going to take some time to play out. And then when you've got this citizens initiative going out and trying to gather these needed signatures to get this on the ballot, that speeds the clock up even more if they're successful. And then it almost becomes a referendum as well on the oil industry. The oil industry can say, okay, whatever projects we have on the line, we better get them going now so we can defend ourselves from this oil tax going back into place. And also it sends another confusing message to the industry, perhaps, are the taxes this or are the taxes going to go back? So there's a lot riding on this. The picture is very muddled right now, and it'll take some time to clear it up.
You had something to add, Tim?
Oh, real quick, Michael. The one thing we did not see much momentum, in the early part of the session, there were a lot of talk about the changing the relationship between state funds to private and religious schools.
Yeah, what happened to that?
Well, it just kind of fizzled. You know, I mean, there was a lot of talk and it seemed like a lot of momentum. This would have taken a constitutional amendment, of course. And a lot
two-thirds of both houses.
Yeah, and a lot of school folks were very concerned about it diverting money from public schools and that sort of thing. But it just stopped. And I think overall the leadership decided we're going to focus on a few issues and not spread our energy.
You know, I talked to one of the leaders of the group that's trying to get the vouchers and private school education money, and he told me that he thought the majority of the House members didn't have an opinion either way, and they just thought they were being squeezed on this.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Okay. But at first I thought like there was going to be a lot of attention paid to it, and then
and of course they have another year before the next election.
Yeah. So maybe it'll be back next year.
Okay, let's go to Paul Jenkins. Paul, Mark Begich opposed every gun control proposal President Obama had. Does this translate into an NRA that's either in favor of men in his next campaign or at least a neutral?
I don't think the NRA is going to go after him. I think the liberals are going after him. I don't think the NRA will. He voted against the expansion. He voted against the entire package of gun control bills offered up by Obama and other senators. The particular one I think he's taken the most heat on recently was, of course, the expansion of background checks, the Manchin-Toomey bill. That particular amendment contained a whole host of things that go well beyond just expanding background checks. And in fact, the pro-gun people will tell you that it set the stage for gun registration. It does it in a roundabout way, of course, by simply stipulating that the Attorney General can't keep such a record. Now federal law says nobody can keep such a record, but now it just says the Attorney General. Other agencies then would be able to, according to the way this was written. It's just a poorly written piece of legislation. I think our senators would have been insane in this state to support it. I don't know. I don't know how.
I mean, how about if I jump off a bridge?
Why don't I set myself on fire and jump in front of a truck? You know, that would be. You've got magazine capacity. You're going to tell Alaskans that you can't have 15 or 30 round magazines or AR-15s. No, you can't have those. I think they had no choice on this particular measure. I think they would tell you that they have no choice but to vote the way they did. Luckily for us, on this particular measure, this particular amendment, they voted the way they did, even though the Senate wasn't going to make the filibuster number 60.
Now, you believe this bill could be stripped and turned into something that could pass,
well,
right?
Well, this particular amendment is used by gun control forces. They're looking for some leverage. They're looking for some piece of legislation that will give them leverage so that they can kind of steamroll the NRA and their enemies. It's either this or it's the other one they like is gun trafficking. And those are the two they're working on because it's got wide public appeal just on the surface, you know. But I don't think they had a choice in this particular case. I think they did the right thing.
It was interesting in the New York Times, had several people who observed President Obama said he had 90% of the American people behind him, but he couldn't get anything remotely that kind of a vote, and he couldn't even get a vote when you get right down to it on the bill that he wanted.
There you go.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition, and we'll see you for sure right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.